Thank you for indulging me. Remember the days of the slides where your friends would make you come over for hours and look at pictures? So many of those pictures are stories caught in time. I wanted to stop at each one and say, that person and this and that. I want to tell you why there were three of us laughing and hugging in front of the cliffs of Moher before we took the ferry to the Aran Islands. I want to explain who each precious soul was and what led to our pose together in those pictures. I want to explain that those were no ordinary donkeys. They were magic. And that the rainbow that you saw, I have 100 pictures of that rainbow. That rainbow was a sign of hope and comfort on a morning after a very scary night. I want to tell you about the storm that caught us as we crossed to the island of Capri. Maybe you noticed how wet I was in one of those pictures, and how we all decided we were going to stay above on the outside of the ferry. And like the frog that gets boiled in hot water, by the time we were ready to go downstairs, it was too late. We were soaked to the bone, and we laughed in the face of it. I want to tell you about the kindnesses that saved us and buoyed us, about the man who took care of Liliana without being asked when she became wretchedly ill on the ferry trip, how he got her to the back of the boat before she ejected everything she ate in Capri. I want to tell you about the shop owners that were hidden in little neighborhoods at the perfect little Airbnb that we found by accident, not the one that we booked originally, and in the tiny alleyways of Venice, who were so kind and lovely and made us feel welcome. And there are moments I don't want to tell you about, but I know I'll have to at some point. The moments when I wasn't who I wanted to be. Like the time that I did not show compassion to a stranger who was asking for money, and I'm still haunted by that mistake. Or, on a slightly lighter note, my mocha pot meltdown, which was almost the title of this service, and reminded me about how bad I am at receiving gifts. Incidentally, this service was also almost called Sweating on the Spanish Steps and Introversion Illness. For this service, I had an imagination that I would share some meaningful stories and extrapolate relevant meaning that somehow would resonate with you all and make my embarrassment and regret useful. Hence the wherever you go, there you are title, which seems it would have covered the gist of it. But it hasn't worked out for this homily to be what I had planned, not entirely anyway. So here's the vulnerable truth. As I tried all week to write this sermon, it's felt kind of impossible. Because as I mentioned earlier, I want to say all of the things. And at the same time, I found that I'm still really tender about it all. And despite my best efforts and even trying to force it for a while, I'm not quite ready to tell all those stories well, to make them into a pattern and a picture that fits together. And I'm surprised by that, but I'm still processing and I'm still connecting and integrating it all. And I want to save some of those details for when I can tell them in a way that feels real and invite you to share in the meaning making with me. Re-entry is different than I thought. Not in any bad way. It's been incredible. But I do have to honor it. I've said to people throughout the week that I'm gaining my stamina back. I was driving home on Tuesday after saying hello, and I felt like a Sunday. I needed a nap. Luckily, I could take one. Maybe you know that this service was initially intended to be a joint service with the Committee on Ministry, where we did a little reflection on how the church did while I was away and how I did while I was away. But in the weeks leading up to my return, I realized that it would be too soon for that. Don't we all need a little time to settle in to what it meant and means, what's most important, how we want to move forward together? So what I can say right now on this first Sunday, looking out at you all again after sabbatical, is that this 6.5 months, these past 28 weeks, were a deeply personal time in a lot of ways. But I never stopped thinking about the happenings of the world. I never stopped thinking about all of you and your own struggles and joys and wondering how this time was living in your hearts and minds, your bodies and tensions. I never stopped thinking about our work together or questioning, what is mine to do? What do I serve? Why? I learned that my love for this church, for her people, and for her people is real. It's not that I didn't think it was before, but it's so poignant to be reminded of it over and over and over again while I was absent. At least for me, the Shania Twain song rings in my head, "You're still the one." It looks like we've made it. Look how far we've come, my baby. When I was gone, I was glad to hold the news a little differently. I felt less compelled to absorb myself in it so that I might have something useful to say on a Sunday morning. I was grateful for the time and space to remember why I care about this world and its being so much anyway, and what it is about this precious existence that makes it so worth fighting for. And I hate that word fight so much. In fact, I've become a little bit allergic to violent language. I start to feel prickly and itchy when it begins. And at the same time, I'm so angry. I just want the awfulness to stop. It feels like such a waste of this gift we're given. One of the things that is true about me and that never changed, no matter where I went or who I talked to or what I wrote or listened to or watched, is that I tend to live in this rather constant state of contradiction and paradox. I am always caught in this desire to understand why people do what they do and feel what they feel. I keep spinning in my brain what their thinking is. What are their fears? Why are they attracted to this versus that? Somehow believing that if I could just figure it out, I could fix it. What are they hearing that's so comforting? I spend a lot of time trying to figure out other people. And it can be useful, but it's also a trap. It can paralyze me. It can make it so I spend too much time on people who are doing the harming rather than on those that are being harmed. It can make it so that I'm never sure exactly what the right thing is to do, though I'm proud to say I always know the result I want, which is peace and kindness and fair treatment. I know without a doubt that I want all living souls to be able to feel safe and find joy in their one precious life. But how to get there and what we all should do, I still don't know. I hope that doesn't disappoint you terribly. That struggle was alive in me everywhere, all the time, everywhere I went. And I found myself getting so jealous of those who don't seem conflicted at all about their own call and response to the pain of the world. Sometimes I can even feel an unworthy urge to upset their clarity. Wherever I went, the part of me that was full of paradox and contradiction and needing to understand, that part of me was there too. Wishing I'd just choose and commit and never mind the dissonance. And sometimes I've wondered if everybody secretly lives like that, confused and concerned and able to think about things in a million different ways. But then I look around and I realize that, no, there really are some people that are just very clear about their call in the world, very clear about what the next right thing is all the time. Like the Buddhist monks, have you seen them walking with their trusty dog Aloka? Come on. Sometimes they're walking always, sometimes barefoot, but always in peace. There are others around the country right now getting their wills in order and showing up on the front lines, ready to put their bodies, their lives between corrupt power and the most vulnerable. Some are overwhelmed with clarity that manifests as standing by with a phone in hand to witness and record. Some write, some pray, some run for office, some wait. Some carve out extra time to be in the woods. For me, on any given day, in any given moment, it all feels like the right thing. And that is a blessing and a curse, especially when it means that no matter what I'm doing, I feel guilty for not doing something else. The compulsion to see things from many perspectives, to touch in on something of how and why different people feel differently, it makes the grasping of truth with a capital T, which I love so much, so very frustrating and slippery. Because I want there to be one absolute truth, one right way. I also want that one right way to be the way I agree with. And I think if only I could find the right words or the right actions, everyone would see and agree. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about my personal relationships or the societal ones. I have had such a hard time letting that want to just get it right, that belief that it's possible, I've had such a hard time letting that go. And while there are gifts in it, I have to, or I'll stay stuck. Maybe more than anything, it continues to be my work to just do the next right thing, even if no one understands, or even if not everyone understands. Even if there are no magic words or perfect actions, even if it breaks my heart. There was a recent Substack article by Carrie Newcomer, which has helped me own something of that, of what I believe, and feel better about that part of me that shows up everywhere, whether I like it or not. And it came out of a conversation she and Parker Palmer had with the author Christy Berghoff. And Christy Berghoff writes about the spirit of place, and she talks about how there's something very beautiful about the fact that we can belong to a physical landscape, a home, a land, but we also belong to a spiritual landscape. And in times of distraction and division, she asks us to think about, where are we still deeply and personally connected? And Carrie Newcomer said, I've stopped waking up in the morning and asking, what can I do? But instead, I start with the question, what do I love? And not as a list of gratitudes, not as a joyful way to meet the day, but as a flashlight leading us toward what is ours to do in the world, what we serve. She says it like this, because what we deeply and truly love is like a flashlight lighting the way, even in uncertain times. And I think using love that way can be a service unto itself. It will probably be a sermon sometime soon as I find ways to tell all the stories I want to tell you well. It might be interesting to see what my love of Irish donkeys might lead me to do in the world. I wonder what my love of mocha pot made espresso might inspire. I wonder if my love of laughing with near strangers on the opposite shore of the Atlantic Ocean, on the coast of Dingle, I wonder what that might guide me to do. Will it lead me to some of the deepest, most impactful choices I could ever make? I think maybe. As Frederick Joseph said in our prayer, love, I'll never stop saying it, no matter how cliche it gets. Love remains the only empire that does not fall. So wherever I go, wherever we go together, may we remember to serve and follow the light of that love. May it be so. Amen.